First order of business, roll call. If I can get through it. Jim Patrick, here. Bill Brannigan?
Here.
Bob Berman?
Here.
Jim Hasselman?
Here.
Gary East is not here. Bradley Escobar?
Here.
John Updike?
Here.
Approval of the Planning Commission work session meeting minutes of October 10th, 2022, and approval of the Planning Commission regular session meeting minutes of October 10th, 2022.
Having read through the meeting minutes, and there were just a few minor corrections, really minor corrections, instead of form we had from in, and a couple spell checks. Otherwise, it was spot on, unless somebody had something they wanted to add. So I would recommend we approve them.
Second.
Okay, any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Anyone wishing to address the commission about anything not on the agenda tonight? Okay,
you,
public hearings. What's that?
He said thank you.
File number 3-NCU-22, non-conforming use permit for the replacement equipment at the Northwest Natural LNG plant. I'm going to skip the Zoom stuff and go to the public hearing statement. This statement applies to all quasi-judicial and legislative land use hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented toward the request being heard must be directed toward the applicable criteria in the Newport Comprehensive Plan, Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes to apply to the decision. The failure by anyone to raise an issue is accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. An issue that may be the basis for appeal to LUPA shall not be raised not later than the close of record at or following the evidentiary hearing. Such issues should be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. The failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damage in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony recorded regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and schedule set for submittal of additional testimony and a period for parties to respond to the new testimony, a period by which the applicant provide final argument. Okay, at this time, I'll ask any planning commissions to disclose actual potential conflicts of interest, bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits.
Site visit outside the gate, the fence. Okay.
Yes, same here, outside the gate.
Yep. Get very close.
If anyone present has an objection to the participation of any planning commission member or the commission as a whole, please raise that objection now.
Like the people outside the fence.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
Dogs sometimes make it in, but.
The Planning Commission may, at the request of a participant or wherever its own accord, continue the hearing to a date certain, provide for opportunity for persons to present and rebut new evidence, arguments, or testimony related to the applicable criteria. Hearing proceed following order, staff report, applicant's testimony, persons in favor, persons opposed, applicant's rebuttal, record closing for public testimony, the Planning Commission deliberation and questions, and verbal decision. Final order and findings will be prepared for consideration at the next meeting or this meeting. Staff report.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. Yes, again, before you have an application that was filed by Northwest Natural Gas to alter the nonconforming use that they have down there by adding some, basically replacing and adding some electrical equipment. The electrical equipment will be placed on concrete foundations towards the north side of the complex within the fenced enclosure, proximate to the electrical equipment building. The specific location is depicted on a site plan that was included in your packet materials. Again, just going for those newer members. In the city of Newport, a non-conforming use is a use that was lawfully established, and then the rules were later changed such that it's no longer permissible. That's the case here. In 1977, the LNG facility was completed. In the early 80s, I believe in 1982, is when the city implemented the statewide planning requirements, which included the establishment of water-dependent and water-related areas. And this particular property, given its location relative to the bay, was designated for water-dependent use. And this is not a use that's dependent upon access to the bay. Therefore, it's not permitted in the water-dependent zone, but it is a lawful non-conforming use because it was established before that water-dependent zoning was placed on the property. So over time, Northwest Natural has improved and modified the facility, and I've listed in the staff report the last four actions that this commission has taken relative to this facility, and concluded that the use was lawfully established and eligible for expansion. The standards that the city applies for alteration or expansion of a non-conforming use are set out in 1432070. They get at a number of factors, all of which are intended to ensure that the manner in which a non-conforming use is being expanded is not going to have a greater adverse impact relative to what the zoning is trying to accomplish. And it speaks to the character and history of the use in the area, comparable degree of noise, vibration, dust, odor, fumes, glare, adequacy of infrastructure to support the use, comparative number of vehicle trips, comparative amount of outside storage, loading, parking, visual appearance, hours of operation, solar access, privacy, and other factors that impact the character and need of the neighborhood. This is a relatively modest change. Relatively small footprint relative to the overall scale and mass of the development there. The staff report includes findings that address each of these requirements, and the staff analysis concludes that, you know, this is a type of alteration where it would be appropriate for the Planning Commission to find that the criteria have been met and to approve the applicant's request. I'll keep it brief, so that's about all I have right now, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Derek?
Has PUD been wrapped in? I mean, I don't know whether this is additional electrical burden on the system or?
The applicant might be able to speak to the electrical demands of the improvement a little bit better than I can.
Any other questions for Derek? Okay, proponents' testimony. Please give your name and your mailing address for the record, please.
Right here?
Yeah.
All right. Michael Smith with Norwest Engineering. My mailing address is 11525 Southeast Idlewild Court, Clackamas, Oregon, 97015. So it is a pretty minor change, and to answer the question, it's no additional load. It's simply kind of updating their existing switch gear, which is steps it down from higher voltage to lower voltage. And moving the conduit underground just to make things tidier.
I saw some reference to an elevated platform. Is that right, or did I read that wrong? Is this new equipment going on the ground or underground or above ground?
So if you're looking at it from outside, it's in a cabinet, so it's on the ground, but the equipment is actually elevated inside so that they can make their sweeps for the conduit and the electrical conduit. So like a water heater, it sits a little bit off the ground.
So that's just a mechanical thing. That's not an emergency inundation avoidance or anything.
Correct.
I noticed we were putting in more piles. That just for the new equipment to rest on?
Yes. So this will be up to current seismic code as well.
50 feet?
Boy.
But that still doesn't hit bedrock, does it?
No. So the intent of those is more to make sure that if there is liquefaction, that it stays upright and moves along. So yeah, no, you got to go a lot deeper to get to solid ground.
Go ahead. Oh, just a comment that I really appreciate the ability to exercise my dogs. They're outside the fence.
Yeah.
And it's just a tremendous, we're one at a time, we've been losing other areas that have always been accessible,
mm-hmm.
the fairgrounds, some of the school property. And so it's really a fabulous resource, and thank you for doing that.
You bet. I'll pass that on.
Please do.
And that was my joke is, if you want to take a tour, I'm sure they'd love to let you on a tour, but they actually appreciate, having the public out there and being able to take advantage of that flatland out there.
I have to say, it has nothing to do with their decision, but in the past they have stated reluctance to let the dogs run around out there. And there's been testimony every single time. Please let the dogs run around out there. But it actually has nothing to do with our decision. But we're taking the opportunity to bring it up again. Any other questions for the proponent?
I had a quick question.
Yeah.
Is there anything being taken out of service or being removed or demolished in some way?
Yes.
Or is this, okay, and then what's the impact of that? Because that's the sense I had, but is that something that's currently in one of the buildings?
No, it's outside as well. It's up against the building. So essentially the new there's an existing structure that's up against the building,
mm-hmm.
that's not on piles, outdated. And okay. So they'll do a switchover. So okay. They'll run all the new conduit and then at some point switch over the new switchgear and then pull that switchgear that's not in service out. So it's a pretty like-kind replacement, just updated.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
You bet.
I see no opponents, so I assume you waive your right to rebuttal. We're going to close the record and start our deliberations with John.
I don't see any negatives to this. Seemed very thorough, and I noticed the seismic resilience issue there. So I really have no concerns with this request.
Yeah, I agree. And I wish there was some mechanism maybe to avoid this little show that it's a predetermined outcome. But mm-hmm. That's probably a lot more trouble than it's worth because this is the only one that repeatedly comes up and we say mm-hmm. yeah, but I'm all in favor of it, sure.
Well, this is our annual LNG upgrading of equipment, and as in the past, I have no objections, but all for it.
I, too, am satisfied with the application you put forth, the work that's being done. Strikes me that it will be a more secure facility, which is a benefit to everybody, the community included. So I fully support your request.
As Derek mentioned in his staff report, the requested changes are relatively modest. I can remember at some point we had a discussion about, the need for Northwest Natural to come back for these relatively modifications, and I thought there was going to be some discussion of maybe streamlining the process for them. But as so far as this application is concerned, I don't have a problem with voting yes for it.
I was going to speak to that. There's some really good reasons why we got to do it the way we got to do it.
Okay.
For one thing, it's sitting in a water-dependent zone.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
It's not a water-dependent industry, makes it non-conforming, and we'd have to mess with too many things. I mean, you just don't want to do it like that. I mean, I know it's annoying to have to keep going through this,
mm-hmm.
but the way the process and the way the state laws are set up, this is the best and easiest way to do it. Trying to figure out some way to shoehorn it into a water-dependent zone,
this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
All right.
You're never going to get off that. And your problem is you have to do it generic. You can't do it one-off. You can't do it just for the LNG plant. So you have to build something that fits a whole bunch of things, and you really don't want to. I mean, because it opens the door to somebody doing something else down there that you won't like.
It's not inconvenient for us because we weren't considering this. There'd be something else to look at. It's the applicant.
Yeah, I know.
He's still smiling, so.
But it's,
we got to stop that.
I had forgotten about the water dependent issue.
Yeah, you know? And so did I. I knew there was a good reason until we started talking about it. I'm like, oh, okay, I remember now. Why were you doing it this way? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things where you just got to go through the process, which, you know.
I can remember the hue and cry back in, what was it, 77 or 78 when the plant was first built, and the sky is falling, it's going to be a danger, it's going to blow up. Remember those days? I don't.
I didn't get here until 78, so it was already here. Okay, any other discussion on the issue? Would anybody like to make a recommendation for approval?
I recommend that for file number 3-NCU-22, modifications to the LNG plant, mainly replacement of equipment, that we go ahead and approve the request.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion on the issue? Hearing none, all those in favor by signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. All right, we'll go on to, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you did the work.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We will go on to action items. First up is file number 3-NCU-22, the final order and findings for non-conforming use for replacement of equipment at the Northwest Natural LNG plant. I don't know if you want any discussion about it. It's the final order. He's got the final order. There's no difference.
What are we supposed to do? I move we approve the final order.
Yep.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on the issue?
Nope.
Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries. If I can find the spot where I'm supposed to sign on this one. Yes.
Yeah, just briefly, when we have a public hearing item that I have pretty good confidence, we're not going to have anybody in the audience, it's just going to simply be an applicant, I'll go ahead and put the findings in final order together so they don't have to wait 2 weeks. If it's anything where there's any kind of risk of testimony, I can't do that because I need to capture the testimony in the actual findings in final order.
Okay, then we're on to new business. 6A, draft of Oregon Housing and Community Services System Development Charge Study.
Yeah, I'll be brief because this is something that was released on the 18th of October. This study was required by the Oregon Legislature. They're looking to develop a better understanding of what system development charges are and what their influence is on the overall cost of housing. And so that's what was driving this. They're very clear in this study that they being the authors, which in this case is Eco Northwest and Gilardi Rothstein and FCS Group. And Gilardi Rothstein and FCS are two of the principal firms that do SDC methodologies in the state, just so you have that background. Eco Northwest does some of that as well, and they have kind of a little bit broader range of expertise. They did not provide recommendations for what the legislature should do. This is just basically background information, but it is open for public comment until close of business on the 1st of November. Anybody is welcome to provide comment. I included the link in my staff memo if you choose to provide comment. But beyond that, I think it's an excellent document that kind of walks through what system development charges are and how they work, and some of the various issues related to them that you might want to keep this handy as kind of reference background information because we will be talking about system development charges again at some point. We did in the past when we did our methodology update in 2017. At that time, we also did the affordable housing excise tax. And so we will undoubtedly be revisiting them again in some context. And so anyway, I think it's helpful information.
Can you talk about where we're at with that excise tax, and has anything been distributed or?
We've only tapped into the excise, well, those funds since it was put together once, and that was part of our match when we were doing the down payment assistance grants, and we had the partnership with Lincoln City, Lincoln County, Newport. We drew from that for our match. That was the only time it's been utilized up to this point. We have about our total collections since inception at the end of 2017 is about $500,000 at this point, and it's broken across three different pots of that have different restrictions on them per the law. So that's the one again where we have 15% has to be remitted to the state, Oregon Housing Community Services, for down payment assistance grants, and then that is driven back to us. You then have 35% that's in a flexible affordable housing pot that can be used for anything that's affordable housing related, including services to those that are homeless. I mean, that falls within the general parameters. It's very flexible. And then the last 50% has to be made available for development incentives, which would be, for example, reducing the cost of paying down, basically, the cost of system development charges for market rate multifamily. We expect through the housing study that we'll have some specific recommendations in terms of how to begin to dole that out, and that will be a nice incentive for market rate multifamily development moving forward.
And do I recall that there was a committee to decide how to?
Yeah, we met a couple times, and I've got some.
Are you a member of this commission on that committee?
I don't believe so. I don't think so. Jim was on the original one when we did the methodology. I'm pretty sure you were the one that was the, but I don't think we have on that small group. So
you'll keep us posted on that.
Yes.
I mean, I go back to the original when we actually upped our SDC charge and got most of the builders and all the developers to sign off on it because they were so low. I mean, they had no relation to the actual costs or anything. And so we looked at what they had to do, and we came up with a number, and that was the original number that jumped it. It probably doubled or 2.5 times what it had been. But it made it, but it still wasn't anything like Bend or Eugene's or Corvallis's STCs way higher than ours. So, and then with the second time when we went through it again, that's when we decided to tier it by size of the unit. Which is now what everybody else is starting to do too.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that almost all the jurisdictions are looking at doing the exact same thing. But we got told by the lobbyists for home builders that what we did was not legal.
Now Home Builders is behind it.
Yeah. No, they were behind it. They just said it's not legal, but if you can get away with it, go ahead. So,
well.
And so they readjusted their thinking on it. So, but, you know, that's kind of where how we ended up there. So,
okay.
I think they've adjusted their thinking on the legality of it, too. I think there are some good arguments for why that's an appropriate methodology. I just think it took some time for that to sink in with a lot of different folks. And I think one of the messages you found in this one was, too, and it particularly came from the developers, is if you go to a price per square foot, you need to do it across all of the different services you collect for it to make sense, which really gets at, you know, a situation we don't have, but a lot of jurisdictions have, where, say, the city is collecting for transportation, and then maybe they have a parks district that collects for parks, or a wastewater district that does for wastewater. And if those aren't all in sync, it really doesn't really help. You really need all of those to be on that price per square foot for it to really make a difference. So
a couple of questions, if I may. So you were mentioning that the review of the fee structure and a possible change to that? Is that on an irregular basis or a regular basis? Or I'm used to it being part of an annual review and part of a budget adoption process by the governing body. Clearly, that's not what happens here. So tell the newbie how this comes about.
Typically, if we're going to take a look at the methodology, we usually would line that up when we do a number of facility plans and have a number of new projects we need to add in, because that's what we're collecting for.
Right.
When you do an SDC methodology, what you're looking at is what do we believe we're going to need to construct over the next 20 years to serve the amount of growth we expect to get. And so each time you do a facility plan, you alter that list of projects. In 2017, we basically had just completed the whole palette of facility plans. Now, they weren't formed, some of them, a couple of them weren't formally adopted until after that. But we had the studies done and we knew what the projects were. And so we had a chance to go in there and say, okay, here's this laundry list of projects, you know, that are called for. How many of these do we realistically think we're going to need to build in that 20-year period? And we pared it down as much as we thought we reasonably could, because the lower that number is, then the lower your overall SDC fees are going to be. So my answer to you is when we have enough new capital projects that the existing methodology is outdated, it's probably when we're going to tackle it, unless there's a policy reason or political reason why they want to dive into it earlier.
And I believe we also, did we put the escalator clause in there that just brings it up according to whatever the construction index
Yeah, we automatic yeah. we automatically do, we built into the methodology an automatic construction inflationary adjustment. So it keys off the construction cost index that's in the engineer's news record. So annually we adjust it.
But you say you have about $500,000 in the fund now.
No, that's affordable housing. That's a different fund.
Different fund. We have six funds.
I included a chart at the back of the report that showed what our SDC collections were.
Right. What was coming in?
My other question was, I wanted to look at a comparison to the other communities. So I wondered why Newport isn't in the appendix. Is it because of the methodology is different than the other cities? Because we've got a chart that shows the aggregates per year, but
you probably noticed Newport, I did participate in this. I was interviewed and we provided information.
Right.
Okay. SDC methodologies are different enough amongst jurisdictions. It's sometimes hard to compare them apples to apples. I'm not familiar with what you're looking at specifically here, but
road, the sewer, the water.
Be looking at the
226 and
2007 and 2022.
For messing up the
road. Hey, one at a time.
From 2007 and then the 2022 numbers, it seems like every city is in there except us. I just wondered
no,
why that was.
No, I think they only included those that had responded to both, and I don't know that we responded in the 07, but we did maybe in the 22. I'm looking at it right now. You're looking at Appendix D, SDC fees by jurisdiction.
Yeah. Now we don't appear to be in either one.
Oh, really? Huh. I know we responded to that report.
Just thought it might be nice to see how we would compare on a per.
I do have that information.
Because
we had to pull it. We pulled it together when we did the SDC methodology update in 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess we're not on this list.
And I think we were on the chart. There's a chart someplace that shows people.
Here's the chart. That chart?
No, this one had a multi-jurisdiction chart that Newport showed up on as a dot on it.
Yeah.
But
yes, you're right. On the dot.
Yeah, no,
we're on the range.
We're in the kind of the pink dot on the coast.
Yeah.
Range wasn't terribly helpful to me though. So yeah.
Yeah, and like he says, it's just the way they do. Everybody does their methodology. Like a half a dozen different ways,
right?
And then apply different amounts.
Right.
And to give you an example, back when we raised them, like this was 10, 12 years ago, when we first did the first big raise, a city councilor was sitting there and says, your park's SDC fee is larger than everybody else's fee, and they cut it in half. arbitrarily. I mean, it had no, there was no mythology to it. It was just because the council wanted to cut it in half. Homebuilders went, yeah, we don't care. Go ahead.
It's the squeak wheel getting the oil.
Yeah.
You know, somebody comes and complains.
Yeah, and then later on, I won't go there.
It wasn't a complaint driven. It's the art of doing STCs, and there's actually a science behind it, and there's an art behind it. And so, you know, you do your methodology, and you figure out what you need, and then that's formulaic, and then you kind of figure out how you allocate the cost. But at the end of the day, you take a look at it, and you say, is it realistic for us to expect that we can collect this? Because if you set those rates too high, well, then the development's not going to happen, and you collect nothing. And so that's where, you know, you end up doing analysis and showing, okay, city council, planning commission, if we do this methodology, it's going to put us at this number. This means this kind of number when you add in building permit fees and the other upfront costs. And here's where we are relative to other jurisdictions. And here's how much of a percentage that's likely to be of an overall development cost. With SDCs, we try to keep it under 5%. You get too high, and you saw some of this stuff in here, you get into the 13%, 14% range, you really are putting the pinch on the developer to be able to do the project. And so that's where the art comes in, where they have to make a decision, okay, we can't collect all of it, but maybe we can collect 50% or 65% across the board, and then that's the art of it, and then they just set it that way.
Because they look at the list of projects, and it needs this amount of money, and Newport runs roughly around 50 or 60% of what that total is what they actually collect, and figuring that they're going to make the rest of it up somewhere in the budget where you need to go do something, you'll find grants, you'll find money, you know, like transportation. And most of the time when we do transportation, we're getting ODOT grants. Is paying for a big chunk of it.
Right.
And so they're just showing up with a seed money for it. But it can sometimes take up the entire transportation SDC fund just to provide the seed money for something that's a whole lot bigger number.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's you just go out there with the numbers you got. And like you said, you try to keep it low enough that you're not causing no housing to be built. So
yeah, I would draw your attention to the chart on revenues because it's interesting. It tells a story. You know, we made that change in the methodology at the end of calendar year 17, so kind of in the middle of the 17-18 fiscal year. And as you can see, it's SDC collections are volatile. Year in, year out, they're driven by what development happens. And they can be driven by just a small number of rather pricey projects if they happen to move forward. And that's what you'd see on an 18-19 or 21-22 when we're doing a, you know, Marine Studies Initiative building down there, or we're doing hospital renovations, or we're doing large multifamily projects. You're going to see those years when those permits actually are pulled. Not when the construction's done, but when they pull the permits, that's when they pay the fees.
Okay.
So that's where you'll see the higher numbers. But when you look at it across, it didn't significantly increase our collections. You know, you should expect that those numbers will go up somewhat just with natural construction cost increases too. I mean, everything's inflationary. But what you do see, and Jim will remember this, we had previously severely discounted our transportation collections. I don't remember why, but we were collecting like 10% or something like that on transportation.
There was some weird reason for doing that, and I don't even remember what it was back then. So
you see, when you look at this chart, you look at...
It made a lower number. We were happy.
And we were doing almost full collections for wastewater, I think it was,
yeah.
For example. So when you look at this, you can see, you know, for streets... Small number, small number, small numbers, they start climbing after that change. 18, 19, even the lower years, it's a larger percentage of our total collections, and that's because we normalized across all different types. So they're all discounted equivalently.
And that actually brought up parks at that time, too, because it was lagging behind a little bit. So, and the only other thing that Newport doesn't do that homebuilders and developers try to get done is to move the payment of SDCs from the beginning to the end,
right?
Because of the carrying costs on it. But
they're, yeah, they're,
I don't know that it makes, but then, you know, then you're like relying on a certificate of occupancy or something like that in order to get them funds before you can issue it.
Which makes it harder. Yeah. You're at the risk of not getting your collections.
Yeah.
That's one piece.
Yeah.
And it's another administrative issue. You've got to track it all the way to occupancy, which, you know, sometimes from when a permit's pulled in occupancy, it's relatively quick. Other times, it could be quite a long time before they finally get to occupancy.
I can tell you about one where in the building that not the anchor is, but the right above it, they mm-hmm. pulled a permit to put a restaurant in that place. Never did it.
Mm-hmm.
Paid the STC fees, which were substantial, over $10,000, and never put the restaurant in.
Would those be refundable then?
No. You paid it.
But they get the credit and they can sell it to somebody else.
It is a credit. That's the other thing. It's a credit on the property. Yeah. And so those would be a known commodity. And so anybody else who wants to come in and do the restaurant would be able to assume that credit. But see, that's the other thing that throws off your STC comparisons. Methodologies are actually probably more similar than the credit programs. They're all over the place in terms of how credits are handled. So that's.
Did I also read correctly that Newport did offer its own financing or a payment over time option? And does anyone actually avail themselves of that?
Statutorily, I think all jurisdictions are required to provide some degree of financing over time. But, you know, the interest rates on that are not attractive.
Yeah.
So folks generally don't do it.
Right.
Plus, you know, typically when somebody's doing a development, their preference is to roll it into their construction loan.
Correct.
And deal with it that way as opposed to having to mess with it over a 5 or 10 year period with installment payments.
Commercially, you're normally going to see it get paid up front. It's residential where we're being paid at the end because you're dealing with smaller entities.
Right.
Big outfits just build it into their costs.
Both jurisdictions I came from, both Tucson and San Francisco, we did the, in coming out of a recession, each jurisdiction deferred the payment to a later trigger point, whether it be a closing or an occupancy, something that they could track. The challenge was the management of that and ensuring the collection. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and I think once times got better, they all reverted back to at time of permit.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the most efficient way to do it.
I'm arguing it because home builders always argue it. So bring it up, so it's not going to go anywhere, but hey.
Is a community community typically restricted to one methodology?
They are limited to the methodology they adopt, but there is some flexibility in what's in the methodology. So if you adopt, to do an SDCs, to charge SDCs, you have to have a methodology that outlines, you know, how you're doing it, why you're doing it, what you're collecting for. Your expenditures are limited to the projects you're collecting for. You can't collect them and then go spend it on some project that is not growth related, like, that's like maintaining a street or something like that. You can't do that. Everything with system development charges is about building infrastructure that's needed to accommodate new development. We can't use those dollars for existing. It's come up many a times. It's like, well, why can't you throw STCs at rehabbing that storm drain line? Because that storm drain line is, you know, serving an area that's fully built out. So we can't use STCs for it. Or in some cases we can, but we're limited to say 20% of the overall cost because that's all that we have in terms of available additional development capacity in that area. So you are limited to your methodology. You have to expend the funds consistent with the projects that are outlined in line with the percentages that they're eligible. But how you tackle your methodology, you do have some flexibility there.
Who administers all that? Is that Public Works?
No, that's me.
You?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got your spreadsheet somewhere.
Yeah, and we're the ones that handle the money. I mean, we're the ones that it's all paid for at building permitting. So we do all of the calculations. We actually have a really slick Excel worksheet that we can just fill in, and it calculates it for us.
Well, how about the expenditures?
I'm sorry?
How about the expenditures?
That's done through the budgeting process. And so if a project is SDC eligible, then we can bring SDC dollars to the table for it. And so typically on any given budget year, we'll have one, maybe two SDC projects, depending, you know, depending on what's moving forward. You generally don't want to exhaust an entire SDC account because it takes a number of years to build it back up. I think this last fiscal year, the SDC project that we had budgeted was parks, and it was match for state park grant that unfortunately our park and rec folks weren't able to secure this year, but they'll go after it again next year. That's for the Agate Beach neighborhood park rehab.
The other thing you see done in jurisdictions is the project list that they use. They play games with it. And an example here would be if all of a sudden we put replacement of the bridge as a transportation project plan for Newport at $1 billion and then tried to divvy that up. There's been jurisdictions done stuff like that with bridges and stuff that just the odds of them getting built are slim and none.
Yeah, we had the additional travel lanes on US 101 that we pulled out in 2017. They'd thrown them in the 2008. And we's like, we're not going to add those additional travel lanes in 20 years. It's not going to happen. Why would we be collecting for that, you know?
So, I mean, that's the type of thing. You got to look at both things, both the methodology and how you're figuring out what the number is. And you also got to look at the projects and make sure you keep it. And Newport's always been reasonable about it. I mean, that's what's been nice here. You know, I go and talk to them at home builders and they tell me about what everybody else is doing. I'm like, well, that's not what we do here. So,
well, you saw the color of the dots all up in the metro area.
Yeah.
That's where the priciest SDCs are up there.
Now, the housing report that's coming out, I know they categorize some lands as non-buildable because of a lack of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to make an attempt to quantify exactly how much infrastructure would be required in order to dump those into a different category of buildable? Or is it they just say, this is out. We can't provide the infrastructure.
We actually fed in the specific details for what's required in each of those areas. You just don't see it in the report because for a number of things. I mean, it's, you know, your degree of accuracy on any of those is relative. You know, we're talking about planning level. We're not designing a specific housing project for each of those planning areas. You know, we're providing order of magnitude costs of what we think will be needed, but, you know, that could be very different from what the actual costs are depending on, you know, what happens. Now, what it's useful for is for what's reflected in the report, I mean, which that housing study showed in some areas, your cost of building the housing product and infrastructure is so high, there's no way that a developer is going to have funds left over to buy the land and still get a reasonable profit out of it. So where that gap is very, very large, that tells us we're going to have a very difficult time seeing any kind of housing happen on that property because the cost of getting infrastructure to it and within it is so high that there's really no way for it to pencil out for a developer. It's where the number is more narrow that it says these are areas we probably want to drill in to see if we can, through strategic investment, close the gap. So this is kind of like the first blush. Okay, we're gonna kick a few of these out. These are the ones we need to focus on, and then we can drill in on those.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, water and sewer is normally pretty easy to figure out. Mm-hmm. It's the transportation when you got to bridge something or cut and fill something, or you know, that's you can't get. Or the distance is so big that we got a ton of land around the airport. That ain't going to happen anytime soon unless we figure out some way to finance a water line and a sewer line to that thing. Mm. So. All right. Any more on that subject?
Nope.
Okay, then we're on to unfinished business. The only thing I have is Planning Commission work program update.
Yeah, I filled it out through February, and I'm going to have to make a change already on the November 28th one, where our GIS specialist was going to do an interactive web-based zoning map. I will end up doing that, but it won't be our GIS specialist because you just took a job with the city of Portland. And he will not be with the city on the on that date.
This is the guy that just got hired?
Yeah. Yeah, he took a job up in Portland. So he's his last day with the city is the 9th of November. And I'll be working with him to get this as complete as possible, and we'll go ahead and do that, but it won't be Carl who will do walk through with you. I'll have to do that. So, but we should be able to get it more or less put together, and we still have enough time for that, given what's on his plate right now. So, but we got to think about, we may tweak it a little bit just to make it as fail-safe as possible, because we're not going to have somebody in that position for a bit to maintain it. So we got to keep that in mind.
Derek?
Yeah.
Will there be a work session on the public hearing for the South Beach Church annexation proposal?
No, it's quasi-judicial. That's a quasi-judicial action, so there will be no work session. It's not legislative. So y'all just have a public hearing on it. If you run into a situation where you need additional information, you have the right to do a continuance on that and ask for the additional information. So if you run into a situation where you need that, just chime in at the
hearing. Can you share with us an overview of what the proposal is?
I don't have the application yet, so no. But I do expect it soon. And then on the 28th, I'll probably squeeze in. I need to get a work session scheduled with you guys to go over some standards that Thompson Sanitary would like to see us put into the land use regulations for trash enclosures for multifamily and commercial projects. And I think this is largely related to how things are going with Surfview Village. They felt that part of the challenge up there is that, well, they would have liked to have seen more enclosures than were actually placed, but it's not just a function of standards. One of the problems they're running in there has to do with management of what they have, which isn't something we can fix in a land use code. See, they chose to go with a compactor, which is more efficient. You don't need as many enclosures, but you have to actively manage it. And they're not doing a very good job of that. And so people are throwing trash all over the place, and it's causing nuisance issues. And so we had a chance to meet with Thompson's and kind of go through some of the issues there. But they're not asking for standards just because of one particular challenging site. I think they recognize that it would be helpful for projects with a larger population density or a large amount of waste, which can be certain commercial projects or industrial projects, that there be some clear standards in our code in those circumstances where, you know, folks are not doing what they recommend they do. Now, at the end of the day, under the franchise, Thompson has the authority to say, hey, look, we're not going to provide service unless you do A, B, C. But there are certain things that'd be nice to get fleshed out upfront before a project's built, you know, in terms of size, location of some of these. Now, you know, our current practices have developers go work with Thompson's and then reflect that on their plans, but we don't have any specific standards. And that's done in some areas. Some areas it's, you know, you have X number of dwelling units that equates to Y number of trash enclosures. Trash enclosures must fit a certain specification in terms of their size. They must be oriented a certain way so the trucks can get to them. You know, you can put that in clear and objective standards, and I explained to them that we have to do it that way for housing in the state of Oregon, because any housing is considered now needed housing, and under state law we have to have clear and objective path for approval. So, and they got that. So, and they'd like to attend that work session and kind of share with you guys some of the issues they've been dealing with as our franchise holder for trash management. Yeah.
Getting back to the previous item in my pet peeve, can you see if he can produce a city limits map high resolution before he leaves?
Okay.
Anything else?
Nope.
Hey, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.